You never want to see that. So, gentlemen, this will be our Force Awakens podcast.
Yes.
First of all, has everyone seen it?
Yes. Yes, 5 times.
Okay. Mickey?
Only twice, I'm sorry.
Okay. That's fine. All right. But we've all seen it. Okay, yeah. Good.
So, here there be spoilers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let's begin. After years of rebellion, the death of Emperor Palpatine gave the oppressed peoples of the galaxy undeniable evidence that the Empire could be defeated. A longing for freedom and peace drove a great tide of revolution from sector to sector to the point where a truce, unthinkable at the height of the Galactic Civil War, was signed between the New Republic and the weakened Empire. As one of its first acts, the restored Senate promptly passed the Military Disarmament Act. Many were convinced that the age of galaxy-wide conflict was over. Except the Disney Studios and Emperor J.J. Abrams, who then brought us The Force Awakens. Here to discuss this monumental feat of Star Wars history are the gentlemen nerds, Mr. Mark Finn. Mr. Mickey Finn.
I'm just staring at the microphone like Luke at the end of the movie.
Aaron DeRive.
I'll only come back if you bloody kill my character.
And I am Joseph Fotino. So join us, will you? And of course, be aware, this podcast will contain spoilers. Once again, this podcast will contain spoilers. So if you haven't seen The Force Awakens, turn this off. Go see The Force Awakens. What are you, crazy? And then come back and listen to us. Gentlemen, I'd like to start by posing the ultimate fanboy question. So, what'd you think about the film?
I have to go first because I've been asked that question 750 times by everybody who's come to my movie theater.
Nice.
And my answer is the same. This is the Star Wars sequel I've waited 34 years to see. I loved it.
Lovely. Mickey?
I loved it as much as Poe loves his jacket.
Wow.
He
gave it away. So oh,
that's the thing. No, it looks better on you. You can do it.
Yeah.
Aaron, what do you think?
I actually loved the way this movie made me feel, but as a screenwriter, I would have written a different story.
Okay, I'll take that. Right. And I really enjoyed the film. I will go so far as to say I did love the film. Now that we can all agree that it was an enjoyable experience at the movies, and we're not, frothing at the mouth with rage and anger at J.J. Abrams, we can become the nerds that we are and nitpick, because that's what we're going to do.
Nice.
Aaron called me after he saw it, because, we were all under this sort of it was really nice of Facebook to sort of have this, weekend-wide gag policy. I thought everybody played as fairly as they could have possibly played, which was nice. There were a lot of, yeah. I saw it, I liked it, we'll talk on Monday, that kind of, places, which I really appreciated. But then, of course, Monday came, and then this vomitous eruption of links and blog posts, and oh, you got to be kidding me. Aaron called me when he first saw it and basically said the same thing. Yeah, I would have written a different movie. But I gotta say, whatever my writerly feelings might have been about the film, it's very hard, nigh impossible for me to separate myself from this material and look at it with a critical eye, because I respect Abrams as a creator, and I know that he and Kasdan had a pretty free hand when it came to doing this film.
Right,
they didn't have a lot of studio interference. They basically said, look, we have to do this. You guys have got to back up, mm-hmm. and it does not have a lot of the familiar thumbprints and fingerprints that a Disney movie would have. I would say you can see those fingerprints more on the Avengers Ultron movie than you can on this one. So, not saying that 8 and 9 won't just be festooned with mid-level executives who grew up watching stuff.
Two words for you, Rian Johnson. You don't hire him to do a studio standard film.
Well, you know, fair enough.
You know, but and you know, that's why I have heard that is why they changed the story for The Force Awakens, is they were charting out the story across the three new movies and realized that if fans were going to come back and just in the same droves to see the second and the third, you had to have that hook. You had to have, you know, give them just enough in this first one for them to say, oh my God, my Star Wars is back. And then, you know, and then the 1-2 punch with the second and the third movie with new stuff, new characters, things we have not seen before.
I will say the one thing that I think stands out in your statement is that it's Star Wars. And if they delivered, oh, I don't know, let's hypothetically say a CGI-laden, ridiculous backstory of some of the characters from the first trilogy. Oh, wait, they did that. And it was still broke box office records, and it still brought people back for the second, and it still brought people back for the third. It's Star Wars. It's foolproof. There's no way they can lose. They can give us anything, and we'll be lapping it up like dogs.
Right.
For the first time, I agree with that, but we're getting a property that is actually able to experiment with different styles in a film property. You see this in books, you see this in comics. You don't see this in films. The next movie is a heist movie. The one after episode 8 is going to be an action comedy. You know, they're going off in different directions. I would love to see the Boba Fett movie be directed by Quentin Tarantino. It's not going to be, but I'd love it.
Right.
No, you know, that's a really good observation, and it's something I was thinking about while I was thinking about this podcast today. Is one of the things, you know, you have to allow for those directorial differences. You know, I watched 4, 5, and 6 before we got to 7. My third viewing was 4, 5, and 6, and then 7. One thing that I'm convinced of is that Star Wars was amazing. The first film, right. Star Wars, was just a watershed moment in filmmaking for a number of reasons, which I've talked about on my own blog and won't bore us with here. But there's a point at which you can tell the money got to the point where Lucas had to basically tread water in it. And then after that, he was just floating on piles of it. And J.J. Abrams, while his filmmaking style certainly owes a lot to Lucas, he wasn't afraid to do quiet moments. The Star Wars movie doesn't slow down after the first 20 minutes. I mean, as soon as Owen and Aunt Beru are crisped, after that, it's all action. And there's literally 15 seconds of him and the Millennium Falcon going, I can't believe he's gone. And Leia says, there wasn't anything you could do. And then Han says, hey, we're not out of this yet. And then we're back at the dogfight. So there's no, you know, that scene on the catwalk, Lucas would have never filmed that in his wildest dreams. He would have never set it up that way. He would have never filmed it that way. We've seen him kill Jedi before, and it's always an operatic moment.
let's talk about that catwalk real quick, because you said opera, and that's a really good observation, because the strike heard round the world, the lightsaber ignition heard round the world, happened coincidentally with the death of the star. There was a beautiful shaft of light coming in through the opening that was bathing both characters on that catwalk. They stood there for a moment, and the minute that star died and the light died in a very operatic fashion, the lightsaber came on.
Right.
So I thought that was very well done poetically. And of course, I'm sure you all felt the same thing the minute Solo stepped on that catwalk. I personally thought, well, Harrison Ford's getting his wish. There's no doubt.
I felt it a few seconds before when you see the look on his face.
Yeah. Right. It was resignation. Yeah. Because let's face it, he went out there and did what he did because he told Leia, I will try to bring him back. He didn't believe that there was any redemption. I don't think he really did. Right. But he did it for Leia.
No, I actually knew he was dead the minute they announced they were doing a seventh one and he was returning. But that aside, I agree that moment had a certain, which, you know, having seen it twice now, and by the way, this is something I've heard from almost every source who has seen the movie, it gets better with repeated viewings.
Yes, very much.
And it does. When I first saw that moment, it didn't have the impact on me that I think, you know, it was intended to have. And then I saw it a second time, and then I got misty-eyed. I was like, wow, that is a really powerful moment. The look on Harrison Ford's face when he's reaching out to touch his son. And I mean, just, it was, wow. It was like, man.
Aaron, you've read the script.
I've read parts of the script, like things that I was curious about. Like, well, wait a minute. What was that guy or who was this? But you know, I have not read it from beginning to end. No.
Have you read the scene?
No, I have not read the
scene. Now I'm curious. I'm going to have to go check the script and see if the fading star was in the original script or if that was something that was added later.
That's a great question. Yeah. I mean, that's such a visual thing that I almost think that's something that JJ might have said, hey, let's shoot this way. It is such a visual moment. I don't know if that would necessarily translate on the script, but I was going to say, watch the interview. This I think is just very telling. It goes back to what Joseph was saying, or maybe Mark, about that Lucas would not have made a film like this. Yeah. Watch the Charlie Rose interview that Lucas did, where he called Disney white slavers and later apologized. And you get everything you need to get from that interview of him explaining that he did the Star Wars, the original trilogy. That was done. That was him as an artist doing that. The prequels were different. And the next three would have been even different from that. He is exploring this world as an artist would, as somebody who was trying to tell a certain story that really is only important, in my mind, to him, to Lucas. Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't. He would not have given us a movie like The Force Awakens. No. It would have been... His version would have been as different as Phantom Menace was from Star Wars.
Right, and I think the studio wanted to play it very safe.
Absolutely, absolutely. Safe. And I actually am glad that we're going back to the universe that we love, rather than seeing, well, what's the next chapter in Lucas's, mind you, creative genius, because I'm not going to take anything away from that man. He is a creative genius. But I was less interested to know where his interests lay now in that universe than I was in returning to the Star Wars of my youth.
And something to, if you don't know, Lucas's background is he was a huge fan of experimental film and some very, very bizarre Canadian films that were a lot of imagery. So something like the commercial success that he's been steeped in is like, if you know this and you watch him, what tends to come across as crabby and kind of, it seems more, once you know that this isn't the style of film that he wanted to be making, seems more of a, just kind of a weight. And he originally retired to go off and make those films and then never did. So I'm kind of curious.
Right.
I'm very happy. I'm going to go, I don't know if this is a controversial statement, but my take on this, you know, you guys have obviously been watching with me as the holiday season unfolded, just article after article, not just the fan theories, but, you know, in condemnation of Star Wars, in praise of George Lucas, you know, just everybody is suddenly an expert and has weighed in on this subject.
Right.
I think there's some truths that we can all agree on here. You know, the first one that I said earlier, Star Wars was a watershed moment. I think inarguably it changed everything.
Yes. Yep.
Second, Lucas was impacted by the money, and that money crept into his creative vision, and he made decisive changes to his vision because he owed something to the people that paid him all this money. And you cannot...
And by the way, Gary Kurtz has corroborated that. Gary Kurtz has said that is exactly the case.
Yeah.
So explain that a little further when you say that he owed something.
Well, you know, he took a big cut from the director's salary in order to make Star Wars, in order to get the financing with Fox.
He did get a bit of the merchandise.
He got all the merchandising.
The fools signed that away.
He argued for the merchandising rights because
and the sequel rights.
And the sequel and Alec Guinness, by the way, was the only one who got likeness rights in his contract. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Not even Peter Cushing.
A little bit of minutia there for you.
Taking any Tarkin toys into much
later. Yeah, that's true. I think they got everybody on there pretty quick afterwards. Once it all got apparent, but Kenobi, Ben, was the only one initially who signed on and said, I'll take a piece of those, thanks.
But it was also actually, I don't think that's when it hit him. It was when he decided to himself, without the studio, finance Empire, that he started to understand, to get that weight of the money started to fall on his shoulders.
Yes. And,
because they were going over budget. The banks were threatening to cut him off. You know, he was not going to be able to make payroll. There's a great documentary about that. You all should watch it. It's on YouTube, about the making of Empire. And they didn't know what they were going to do. He did not want to go back to the studios, because the studios would have bailed him out.
Right.
And said, sure, okay, well, we will cover the financing, but now they call all the shots.
Yeah.
He did not want to do that. So I think that scared him so much and shook him so badly. And also, he's building businesses all during this period,
right,
by the
Skywalker
way.
Skywalker Sound.
Exactly.
ILM.
ILM. Pixar. I mean, he's creating all of these new ventures. So I actually agree with you, Mark. When Jedi came around, he knew that Jedi had to be phenomenally financially successful.
Right.
And I think he made certain story decisions that Gary Kurtz did not agree with to ensure that, to make sure that this movie would make more money than God, and then he'd be in a position to do pretty much whatever he wanted.
And it didn't make, you know, again, the box office was not the primary.
No, not at all. That's not what funded it.
It was the merchandising, you know.
Yeah.
I think this came about because he noticed that the must-have go-to toy for Christmas, to tie all of our podcasts back in together, was the Yoda toys that were being made at the time. There was a stuffed Yoda toy, and then there was a puppet that was a single piece of molded rubber. And that you stuck your hand up, and basically you could make Yoda's hands go up and down because he was holding his Geimer stick, and you could make him nod. It was ridiculous. It was the dumbest thing ever. But those were
He knew. No, you're right.
Those
he
were the
knew.
Things
he
that
knew.
Flew off the shelves because moms bought them because they were cute, and so that became the deal there. I think what we have,
and hence Wookiees became Ewoks, right, and yeah, all that. Yeah,
gentlemen, let's turn our laser focus, because we're talking about the original trilogy and Lucas, although that is a completely lovely topic. But let's turn our attention back to The Force Awakens.
I'll get us there. This is where I want to get to. We're now at a point where Lucas's influence has impacted an entire generation or two of filmmakers, among them J.J. Abrams, unapologetically so.
I think what we
have now is a best-case scenario, because we can't argue with his technical achievements, we can't argue with Lucas's initial vision and imagination that got it all started, but he has now been paid, I think the final total is going to be like $4 billion. And $3.5 billion of it, you know, $3 billion of it, he's donating to education.
Yeah.
So that's a win-win on a global level.
Absolutely. And by the way, that's part of what makes me really love and respect Lucas. I don't care that he did the prequels. Mm-hmm. You know, he was an artist taking a chance, and it didn't work. And sometimes artists get there and do that.
Right.
But the fact is, this man has correct. Didn't work for some people.
Yes, some people love them.
But you know, the fact this man has such a great heart and such, he's just one of the most. And everyone around him says the same thing. One of the most generous, kind-hearted men that they have ever met.
Sure. If I meet him, I'd probably break out in weeps. You know,
I'd want to hug him. I'd want to give him a big old man hug.
And for those of you at home that don't know, Lucas is responsible for not only excellent sound quality that didn't exist before, but just the fact that you can go, hey, I want to go see a movie, and go find 12 movie theaters near you.
So where we're at is now we've got J.J. Abrams, who's he's a new architect. He's basically what we get is we get the best of the old stuff without any of the baggage.
Sure.
And so that takes us, that brings us to this new trilogy. So that I just wanted to finish that there.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Nicely done. Thank you. I think anyone can say Star Wars, yes, great movie. Star Wars, yeah, that one guy, Darth Vader with the black, and the Stormtrooper, character. For me, these films are about characters and personalities and visual characters on the screen. This movie's chock full of them.
Yes.
So if you don't mind, what I think we would benefit this is to go through some of these characters, the ones that we met in The Force Awakens, and let's all give a brief, how do you feel about this character?
Okay.
What was the takeaway from that? So we're going to start with the big bad himself, the one that that everyone saw igniting his crazy Claymore lightsaber, that everyone went, what the heck? Let's talk about Ben Solo himself, a.k.a. Kylo Ren. He is, he's the big bad. He shows up on screen, and the very first thing we think is, oh, gosh, he's Sith. I'm not 100% sure about that. But one thing that I got from it was he butchers Max von Sydow on the planet and then stops a laser bolt in midair. Oh, this guy's kicking ass, right? He's amazing. They bring Poe in front of him, and what does Poe do? He mocks him.
Yeah.
And right there, he takes that black shroud, mysterious character down enough pegs where we're not that scared of him at that point. Because Poe's like, what, do you talk? Do I talk? I can't hear you with all this stuff going on. I mean, he's mocking him.
Yeah.
Nobody mocked Vader. When he stood on the Tantive IV and choked Captain Antilles, no one was like, what is all this going on up here, Vader? Come on, the breathing? Really? What are you doing? Yet Poe, right off the bat, mocks, and it sets him up. And later on we see more of a petulant, I really want to be Darth Vader kind of a guy.
Yeah.
Right. No, he is hands down my favorite character in the movie. And I am a fan of Adam Driver, the actor. I think he's incredibly talented. And he brought something to Kylo that I wish Hayden Christensen had brought to Anakin. This guy seems so wounded and unstable. You have no idea what he's going to do. He's ruled by his emotions. You know, if there was going to be a Jedi that was eventually going to betray the Jedi Order and become Darth Vader, it was going to be somebody with that sort of mindset and intensity and problems controlling his rage. Anakin was just too, and as Hayden Christensen portrayed him, he was too tame, you know. Whatever you say, Master. Well, I saved you last time. Or don't forget that one time with the Banthas. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, that's going to be Vader? Really? That's going to be Vader? So I was really glad to see JJ do, and my opinion is that's what he did. JJ said, oh, you all want to see an interesting Anakin, a young Vader? Here, I'll give you an interesting young Vader, and his name is Kylo Ren, and he succeeded. He's a great character. He's a great character. And I know people mocked him when he took off his mask and, oh, look, it's L'Oreal guy or whatever, because his hair was, perfect.
And
yeah,
was the Force.
Yeah,
his hair.
Right, yeah, his hair was feathered or whatever. No, I think the fact that he looked like this sort of confused young kid worked for him.
Yeah.
That is why I'm interested in this character. Had he been scarred or like this gross, monstrous figure, I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm no longer interested. But he's like, wow, he looks like just a kid. He looks like a weird, confused, angry kid.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with him. He's basically, he's found his grandfather's boots, and he's clomping around the house and playing grown-up. I love him.
Yep.
I like the fact also that he seems at this point to be without sympathy. He's not a sympathetic nor an empathetic character. Well, that's not true. I have a certain degree of empathy for him because I can remember when I was that angry at his age. But I like the fact that he's not sympathetic. I like the fact that we don't see his trauma. And maybe that's trite.
Although you know what, I actually will disagree with you. And somebody was asking about the scene where he keeps thumping his belt.
He's thumping the wound.
Right. And people are saying, well, he's making the pain work for him, and he's trying to drive. And you know what? That's not how I saw it at all. I saw it as, given what he had just done, he deserves the pain. He wants to feel that pain.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Of what he's done, because he said, if I do this, I will cross that bridge. I'll become Darth Vader. And it didn't work. And there his dad is dead. He's still no stronger. And it's almost like he's punishing himself.
Yeah, there is a self-flagellation element to
very
that.
Much so. That's how I interpreted that moment.
It's also great Japanese. I've seen a lot of these films where the samurai get injured and they pound the wound as they continue to fight.
Yep.
Right.
It's a very Japanese style of you know what, I'm better than this. I'm better than this, you know. So well, maybe a little bit of both in there.
Yeah, surely. And it is. That's probably probably both, you know. And it's also a reminder of like I'm alive. I feel this pain. I'm alive. I matter. I'm here, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It is very Zen, actually. So, no, I love Kylo Ren.
Mickey?
What was the original question?
What do you think of Kylo Ren, Mickey?
What do you think of that character?
Well, as far as Kylo Ren goes, the fact that he's not sympathetic may be where some of the emo comments are coming from.
Yeah.
But as I've said on Facebook, he's not emo because an emo character wouldn't pay that much attention to his hair.
Right.
He's Metro Scythial.
Metro Scythial, good lord.
But
order another drink for Mickey for that one.
We're not allowed to say Han's our favorite new character in this, are we?
We'll get to Solo.
Because I was about to say, Han is, you know, like, we haven't seen this Han since Empire Strikes Back. So, but
yeah.
Anyways, a new character would be probably Poe. Although, I really like Rey. I think I'll like Rey a lot more after we get some explanation about her. The actress is fantastic, Daisy Ridley.
Yeah, wonderful. So you're going with you're jumping to Poe to say he's your favorite new character in this film?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why?
I really miss the roguish character from the prequels.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I probably have a little bit of front loading on liking the new rogue character. And, you know, one of my favorite Doctor Who characters is Captain Jack Harkness from Doctor Who, mm-hmm. as opposed to the spinoff series. I predisposed, I guess, to liking those characters.
Right. No, and my Mark and I have had this conversation before where that was the character that was missing from the prequels.
Yes.
Was that rogue, that lovable rogue.
Yep.
Absolutely absent from the prequels, and they suffered for it.
Yep.
He was raised on Yavin 4, according to his backstory.
Oh, seriously?
Lupo?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh.
And he was very, very fond of that story of the tale of the Battle of Yavin and the fighter pilots that went in and did what they did. I mean, that's it's a very, you know, that's what I want to do. I want to grow up and be that guy.
Is this from the Chuck Wendig novel?
This is from the Star Wars Force Awakens Visual Dictionary.
Which I am buying. I am getting that
which
book.
Which explains a whole hell of a lot about just a little minutia that you and I and the rest of the nerds of the world cling to.
And didn't he make being an X-Wing pilot fucking cool again?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Nice. She's flying around and blasting shit and having so much fun doing it.
And
I was like,
shot,
wow.
That shot where Finn's looking up in the sky and he sees the Black One, his X-Wing Black One, doing these amazing rolls and shooting and coming through and strafing stormtroopers and going back up again and blasting more TIE fighters. It'd be just an amazing one-shot sequence of this brilliant pilot behind the controls of this X-Wing. It's just astonishing.
Yep.
I liked I really enjoyed the moment where the TIE fighter it gets free and and it, woo, God, this thing moves, you know. Was that just that appreciation for the machinery, you know, was really nice. I like Poe. I'm going to like him better in the second movie when he and Finn have to go on the run from Captain Phasma. But he definitely needs to partner with somebody, you know.
Yeah. And I thought that's where they were going. I mean, Finn and Poe seem destined to be the buddies
for the
next movie.
I suspect that's
the
second movie, yeah.
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 Originally it was supposed to be killed off, and they rewrote it.
Mm, yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad, because Poe's fantastic.
And that's one of the reasons why suddenly he just comes back. And there's no connective tissue between the two storylines is because when they wrote him back into the script, they had him as a standalone little side adventure, and it just didn't work, so they just cut that.
Well, it worked for me. Sure. Yeah, I was fine with it.
Yeah.
Well, then let's go ahead and talk about Rey, who's our new Force user on the light side that we've met. And Rey, of course, grows up on this desert planet. That's familiar. rescues a small droid, also kind of familiar, and ends up leaving the planet on board the Millennium Falcon. Very familiar. We have a character here who's got an amazing amount of Force power, who can blast Kylo Ren's mind delving right back at him, who apparently can use the Force. I'm going to use the voice from Dune. I don't know what else they call it. The
right.
Force suggestion voice.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
The Jedi mind trick.
The Jedi mind trick without even being trained. She just did it. She was sitting there strapped to the table. Daniel Craig standing on the outside of the doorway. She's like, hey, come in here and do this. How did she even know that she could do that? How did she even know, you know, unless she's heard tales of the Jedi, which she has, because she said, Luke Skywalker, I thought he was a myth.
Right, right.
So there's something there that either she was you know, following the story of the Jedi, or she maybe she did get some kind of training that we're going to find out about later.
Well, and given, and again, I'm not counting the prequels, given the familiarity that so many characters in the Star Wars, and it was actually, I will count the prequels because they mention it there too, so many people know, the moment the Jedi starts waving his hand, you know, a few characters have said, oh, no, no, that Jedi mind trick doesn't work on me.
Right.
So it's known. This is something that the galaxy knows mm-hmm. that Jedi can do.
Mm-hmm.
They can influence you and make you do something you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that there was one article that I did really enjoy.
Don't say she's Ben Kenobi's daughter because
oh, no,
that's
no, no,
impossible.
No, no,
okay,
no.
Good.
It was a good article,
though.
No, it
doesn't
work.
No,
it does. It works brilliant. It's brilliant.
This is our first – we're going to have our first official argument on Gentleman Nerd.
No, wait. I was just going to say –
She's 19 years old. She cannot be Ben Kenobi's daughter.
No, granddaughter.
Oh, granddaughter. Okay.
No, nobody said daughter.
Oh,
no, no.
I had read daughter.
No. Granddaughter.
I was just going to say that the – one of the articles that I really enjoyed talked about how there's a sense of symmetry and patterns that repeat in this cycle. What we've seen now basically twice is that the Force is very strong in the bad guys and not as strong in the good guys. They need more training. It was really cool to see the Force being strong in a good guy for once.
Yes.
And I thought that was in the way that these cycles run and that these patterns repeat, each iteration is slightly different from the next. And so the bad guy has to struggle to get what he wants, and the good guy gets it kind of right off the bat. Thought that was really an interesting take on that. And so it worked for me because one of the things that we have seen over the course of six movies is the progression of how the Jedi are trained and, you know, how they operate. And so I think for the purposes of this, I think we're going to get some Jedi training in the next movie, but it was nice for us to be able to shortcut to a way in story where someone can be Force active and somewhat capable. I thought that was really cool.
yeah. Right. We saw an example of raw talent.
Right.
And by the way, how cool is it in the next movie that they're going to be able to cross cut back and forth between Snoke training Kylo in his way while Luke is training Rey? It's going to be a fascinating comparison.
Yes.
And
I'm suspecting that the Force Awakens, the actual Awakens part, might have something to do with the fact that we've got Kylo being more powerful than any Darksider we've seen in raw power. Not in skill, but in raw power. And Rey suddenly being able to learn all this stuff.
Yeah.
And absolutely hand him his ass.
Yeah. And it's just a matter of the Force is now waking up. It's been asleep a long time.
Right. Oh, and let's talk about that real quick, because I was pleased as punch to see a good old-fashioned hack-em-up duel on that planet and no spinning, leaping, baton-twirling gymnastics as in the prequels. They actually were just fighting with swords, which was a very nice change.
Yeah, it was a very Game of Thrones-style fight. Just let's just hack at stuff until we get an opening and then take them down, you know.
Yeah.
I think somebody who hacked at stuff with a lightsaber and made a couple of hits, believe it or not, was our Finn.
Yes.
Was our FN, 2187 trooper, who, was given the name of Finn by Poe.
No relation.
In that TIE fighter. No relation. another Finn. Good heavens. Yeah, how many Finns do we have?
Too many. That's a trip that we don't talk about.
But, Finn, boy, he did okay, considering he had never really done anything like that before.
I liked one of the things that I always liked about The Empire Strikes Back is the utilitarian way in which Han uses the lightsaber to cut open the Tauntaun.
Yes.
Sorry, spoilers. Sorry.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see it being utilized as a tool. And so, obviously, it was the weapon of a Jedi Knight, but it's the blowtorch of just about anybody. So,
it's the sonic screwdriver of a Jedi.
Right.
So it was nice to see Finn use the lightsaber, maybe not channel the Force to make it do amazing things like, you know, anticipate where a laser beam is going to go, or keep him from getting his back sliced open.
Right. But I think, I mean, him not ever having handled a lightsaber, I'll say that clearly, the stormtrooper that he fights with the electric baton and calls him a traitor and attacks him. I'm guessing that Finn has had some similar type of training as that stormtrooper. They know each other. They recognize each other. It wouldn't surprise me if they were in the same, you know, classes where they trained for combat.
According to Chuck Wendig's prequel book, from what I've heard, I haven't read it yet, the Finn story follows several people that he's involved with. And
there's four in a squad.
Yeah, there's one that always kept screwing up, and Phasma told him that he had to stop covering for him. And people think that may be the one that left the handprint on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And the one that yelled traitor was one of his other friends.
Gotcha.
Right.
Now,
they were all trained in the same thing.
The traitor trooper, and I think we all know this, has taken off online.
So weird.
He has become this amazing star because he has a line, first of all, and then he goes and he kicks some major butt with that baton of his that and everyone has named him, the internet has named him Trooper TR-8R.
Right.
Traitor. Huh. So TR-8R, as I'm going to refer to them, has risen to a status that, forget Phasma, forget, you know these
that,
new characters.
Forget Maz.
Forget Maz. TR-8R has got the memes. He's got the artwork. He's got the, you know, he fought while everyone else ran. Don't be a traitor. You know,
That scene should have been Phasma's. That scene should have been Phasma's.
From a connective sort of
yes.
thing. Having her wield that weapon and
you
say that line would have
freaking cool.
Yeah,
weapon in chrome. Nice.
Yes.
By the way, that is chromium on covering her armor that was salvaged from a yacht on Naboo owned by Palpatine. I kid you not.
Dude, this is amazing. That's why I'm going to buy this book.
She's wearing chromium from Palpatine's yacht.
Yeah, her armor is made out of Palpatine's spaceship.
No, his yacht.
But it's that silver, you know, like the one that Amidala flies around
right.
in, you know.
Did you see it? Oh, yeah. God. This weekend I'm going to have girls in a hot tub here on the yacht. Wonderful.
That's crazy. It's just insane. And what a level of detail.
I know. I love that. But see, that's why I want to buy this goddamn book, because it's apparently filled with shit like this,
yeah.
all kinds of little tidbits, yeah. and you're like, really? That's that? And anyway, that's awesome.
I think we're all on board with Finn and Rey. I mean, no problems with those guys. It's so weird that the internet. Well, I shouldn't say the internet. I should say nine. Idiots on the internet made a big deal about girl with a lightsaber and a black stormtrooper. And, maybe I thought too much of Lando Calrissian, and maybe I thought too much of Princess Amidala in the arena shooting the monsters. But
a big chunk of that was purposeful trolling.
I understand that it was purposefully trolling. But then there were three people who took it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of me that goes, finally, some female Jedis instead of just in the background. Here's one we're going to follow. This is awesome.
Yeah.
I love the explanation for the new stormtroopers as well. They're not doing a cloned army. They're stealing babies. That's
right.
Horrifying.
Which, of course, is bringing up a whole new background rumors for Finn.
Oh, I think that the I don't think Finn's parentage is an issue. I don't think it is, because we really aren't dwelling on it. Finn's more of an in the now kind of a guy. Mm-hmm. He clearly doesn't miss them.
Yeah.
I think that storyline can only belong to one person, and clearly it belongs to Rey, and clearly that's going to matter.
Here would be the funny thing, okay? Everybody who's saying that Rey can't be Luke's daughter because it's too obvious, there's the twist. And it turns out the actual only twist is that Finn is related to somebody important like Kenobi.
right. I hope they don't tie. I mean, because the internet has been, of course, afire with this. So you read what you want and you take what you want. But the thing that really annoys me when they go, maybe he's Lando Calrissian or maybe he's Mace Windu's. I'm sure there's more than three black people in the universe.
Yes.
Why does he have to be related to either of
those
people?
Because it's the way these work.
Well, really?
Star Wars
is a soap opera. But
Star Wars is
yeah.
like politics. There's only a few families.
It's the way it works if you're if you're the Jedi heir. I don't think it's the way it works if you're the stormtrooper that because the whole point is he makes his new life. You know,
right.
He rejects his conditioning and now he's his own man. And I think that's really the point of his story.
I'm still wondering when Kylo stops and looks at him when he's still armored on Jakku. There's something they're going to come back to on that.
Just about to say that because he stopped and looked at him. What exactly was it? It wasn't the Force.
It might have been.
What stopped him? It might have been. Who knows? No, when he fights Kylo Ren on the planet with the lightsaber, he gets a hit. He actually hits him with his lightsaber and wounds him.
Yeah.
And I'm going back to Vincent Price, because that's what I generally do. In Mask of the Red Death, he has this great line where he says, "The greatest swordsman of the world does not fear the second greatest swordsman, but the worst
swordsman in the world.
Because he's unpredictable."
Yes, and Fencers will tell you amateurs are unpredictable, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, on the other hand, one of the reasons a lot of people keep going on about, you know, like, oh, they shouldn't have been able to beat Kylo, who's trained and everything. We never see him duel anybody. We see him pick on harmless old men and harmless young walls, you know.
Yeah.
We never see him actually go up against anybody with that thing.
Right.
Well,
and that's exactly correct. As far as we know, he's had minimal training, and his fighting style shows that.
Yeah.
It's a guy just taking these baseball bat power swings with that lightsaber.
Yeah.
There's no finesse to it at all.
It's not even kendo. You know, it's not even beginning kendo. It's swinging for the fences. Yeah, it's baseball.
Yeah.
It's baseball.
But here's another thing that I really appreciate about Finn is that in all the original trilogy and in this movie, we've never seen what a stormtrooper looks like when he takes his helmet off, and the first time we see that, it's a black guy,
and I
think that's fantastic. I mean, because you now know, oh my gosh, those guys under that armor can look like anything. They can be anybody.
Yeah.
There was a female stormtrooper.
There was a female officer on the bridge,
and a stormtrooper.
Too.
Yeah. A female stormtrooper who talked to Kylo in a female voice. You know,
you're right.
They didn't make
a
big deal about it, but there was a female stormtrooper too.
Now, that's great. I love that. We've never seen a stormtrooper take his helmet off, and what do they look like? What do they look like? We know what clone troopers look like.
Right.
But we don't know what Star Wars is.
This is where I think maybe one of the reasons why I like, you know, this is supposed to be 30 years in the future, obviously, and there haven't been a lot of technical deviation. You know, the X-wings have been slightly modified, but they still look like X-wings. TIE fighters now are two people TIE fighters, maybe to
with shields, no doubt, because they were hit a couple of times and didn't blow up. So they added shields,
including Poe's when it goes spinning off into Jakku.
They improve the hologram technology.
So there've been some improvements, but it does, you know, if you look at cars in the 1980s and look at cars now, you can tell they're both cars, but they don't look like appreciably different. And so I liked that, that those were subtle. It helps to keep it familiar. And maybe because they didn't have to reinvent the wheel so much as just maybe put a fresh coat of paint on the wheel, that allowed them to take care of a lot more details.
And that's part of what Lucas addresses in that interview, by the way. He was saying there's a reason the ships all look different in the prequels. The ships would have all looked different in the next three if he had done them.
Yeah.
They would not have been TIE fighters and X-wings and, you know, but we've talked about this. Disney wanted the TIE fighters, the X-wings, the Star Destroyers. They wanted to bring us back into that universe. And that is what that universe is filled with in our minds.
Yeah, and we may have another thing going on here where, as earlier we were talking about how cycles are important to the story.
Mm-hmm.
Cycles are important to mythic storytelling in general, let alone Star Wars. That's why they're important in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And if the point of the next two movies winds up being we need to break the cycle, and, you know, instead of having dark and light, we have gray. Luke's wearing gray at the end. Could be costuming decision, could be intentional. But if we need to break the cycle, then we need to have one more cycle to break, or it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
So the fact that everybody's going, well, it's derivative of the original trilogy and everything like that. Well, yeah.
Yeah, but if anything, I think it plays into what the First Order is trying to do. Like, if you're the Nazis and you win, and it's 30 years later, you're not going to be, in my mind, you're not going to be unrecognizable as a Nazi trooper. You're still going to have the same basic design to the helmet. Your uniform's going to be black. There's going to be SS bars somewhere on you. I mean, you're continuing that tradition. You're continuing that look. Mm-hmm. And so from that perspective, it makes sense that the First Order would look like what they're trying to recapture. They want to go back to that.
Glory days.
Right, to that era.
Well, organized, no chaos.
No chaos. Right. No chaos. So, okay, some new characters we haven't talked about, but we're going to go very quickly. So, in the interest of time, I'm going to give you the character, and you guys give me a sentence of what you think. Ready?
Go.
BB-8.
Loved him. I loved him.
Best use of a droid since the first Star Wars movie, and a perfect example of how you can have cute in the service of the story that doesn't take anything away from the gravitas of the situation.
Yep, bravo. Yes.
I thought he was adorable, and I love his relationship with Poe.
Yeah.
They had a very nice relationship. It was just, hey, buddy! You know, it was a very nice kind of thing.
Yep.
Okay. Snoke.
I'm really, it's too soon to tell. After five viewings of the movie, I didn't get a lot about him. Right now, he's very cardboard. He's the leader of this religious movement, and we don't really get much about him. I'm reserving judgment until the second movie because I know we're going to see him in the second movie. Yeah. So yeah. I'm waiting on that.
He's supposed to be 7 feet tall, so that kind of throws out my theory that he's actually like 2 feet tall.
He's a Yoda. I would have gone in a totally different direction. Still make him evil, but it's now become so cliche that he's Palpatine light.
Yes,
you know, he's not quite going, your journey will be complete, but he's almost there.
Yeah.
And so you know that we've done it. We've done it for six movies, not just you know, three. We've done it for six movies. Snoke, let's make him a new type of dark side villain.
He
speaks differently. He looks different. It's not the same guy. You know?
I do like the theory that it's Darth Plagueis, just so it ties in a whole bunch of stuff because it gives symmetry in a genre that likes to use symmetry.
Right. But somebody posted on Spoiler Wars, Mickey, you should check it out. Somebody said that there's been confirmation that it is not Plagueis.
On another hand, it can't be because he was Sith, and Snoke is not
Sith. This guy's not Sith, correct. This guy's not Sith.
Right. So, okay.
By the way, I have my theory about Snoke, and I'm going to get into that real quick. And I'm convinced that Snoke is somehow tied in to that freaking temple, that the tree on Dagobah that Yoda, and when Yoda died, something was allowed to leave. I'm convinced they're going to
make
it.
That would be cool.
Wow. Yeah.
A stretch, but I'll give it.
We'll see.
I like that. I like it when you pull things out of thin air.
No, of course. I'm like a magician.
I thought Snoke was like Gollum with a robe, which is not surprising because it was Andy Serkis.
Yes, right.
I would have liked to have seen him in prosthetics instead of digitally, you know, rendered. I know it's Andy Serkis and he practically lives in a digital world. I don't think he's real. I think he actually is a digital
thing. Actually, my favorite roles of his have been when he's live.
I know, yeah. Me too. That's why I was disappointed to see that once again they peppered his face and did what they did. But you know what? We're going to learn more about Snoke.
And by the way, I wish Snoke had been a female character. I wish we'd seen a female dark side character, villain.
All right, here's a new character that I found very interesting, Hux.
Oh, yeah.
What is he, a general?
General Hux.
Hux, yes. He was the Tarkin holding the leash of Kylo Ren, although it's more of an equal between the two of them, and they're almost like trying to fight for daddy's attention.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where Hux is like, well, see, Kylo Ren said that this was going to work, and it didn't, daddy. Can I do what I want to do now, please?
Yeah.
I mean, it was literally that kind of back and forth between the two, and I think Hux, if he has any history at all of the Empire before him, which I'm pretty sure he has because he looks like a hardline fanatic.
He is the fanatic.
He probably knows. Right, he probably knows that these black-wearing Sith-type Dark Force users tend to choke people a lot. So he's in his face. He's talking to Kylo Ren, and he's like, no. And I think that gives him a huge amount of gravitas. I mean, he should be terrified of the fact that he's going to get force choked, but he's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I like that back and forth in that byplay. It made me think that the First Order wasn't really settled. Like, they're still working some stuff out, you know? And right now, it was very hard for me to not look at the fact that they're just taking over colonies and shooting people and gunning them all down in the street. And their idea of, you know, an encounter is to carpet bomb the place and then come in and clean up with stormtroopers and blasters. I couldn't help but think about, you know, ISIS in terms of what they're doing over there. And so I like the idea that this is not regimented and planned down with details and so forth, you know. I feel like they're still kind of working it out, and Hux definitely is vying to be, you know, the guy on the ground.
He's standing on the platform on the balcony above the you know, futuristic Nazi Germany before him, giving this amazingly impassioned speech which pops the veins out of his head before he fires this amazing weapon and kills millions, I don't know, billions of people as he destroys these planets.
And I love how when he fires the weapons, his eyes are lit up, you know, red as he's watching these things fire into the... No, and I think in that respect, he was a great counterbalance to Kylo.
And a beautiful choice in casting, too.
My
wife also had fun with the fact that both he and the actor who plays Poe were the two leads in Ex Machina, yet they never meet each other. Yeah.
Blythe was pointing that out. She goes, you know, they were both in Ex Machina. I was like, oh, well, cool.
But he's not as calm as Tarkin was, say for
example. Oh, no.
He's a little over the top. He's got his fanatical side as well, whereas Tarkin was cool and controlled.
There's a bureaucracy to the Empire, isn't there? You know, evacuate about moment of triumph. You seriously underestimate their chances. You know,
I'll take some tea.
Yeah,
I still have my bunny slippers on.
That's right. It's it's 4:15, isn't it? Isn't it time that we flush the garbage and go to hyperspace? You know, that's not this. No, that's not the Galactic Empire was definitely settled by them, you know, and so this is not them, you know.
Right, these are the hardliners. So I think we've covered some of these new characters pretty well. Maz. We're going to go back into this. We're going to
don't forget Maz.
Maz, that's right.
I love
that's
that
right. That's Maz. I love that Wookiee.
I love that Wookiee.
My favorite line delivery.
I bet you do.
I mean, if you can upstage Harrison Ford in a line delivery, that's impressive.
And she's described as being a pirate.
Yeah.
Retired.
That Maz is a pirate. Yeah, but still, there's a history there, and she's lived much longer than Yoda.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she is extra ancient, extra wise.
Yeah.
You know, when she looks in someone's eyes, she can tell who they are, and how could she have ended up with Anakin's lightsaber, I wonder?
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing her and Snoke are going to have some kind of connection that will be revealed in the next few movies. You know, they have to. Snoke apparently also has been around for, you know, 900 years or whatever it is. So I'm curious. There has to be a connection. And by the way, if she's 900 years old, obviously she then knew Yoda and probably had encounters with Yoda, who was 800 years. And
I love that Yoda.
Yes. So I do feel that Maz, of all the characters, by the way, of all the new characters, Maz was definitely cheated on her role, on what importance she was to play and is to play in the trilogy. So I'm really curious. I'm most curious about Maz. You know, yes, I want to know about Rey, and I want to know, you know, whose kid she is. But Maz is as mysterious as Snoke right now.
Yeah. And again, beautifully cast. This is the first time I've ever heard a voice actress, who of course also did the mocap, but this is the first time I've ever heard a voice and line delivery and said, I need to track down movies that actress is in.
Yeah.
There's I suspect we're going to get this in flashback. I think we're going
to
see.
Well, they cut the scene, by the way. She goes back to the base.
Yes.
And she hands a lightsaber to Leia. That's going to be in the deleted scenes.
Right, it was in the trailer.
Yes.
That's going to be in the deleted scenes. And J.J. Abrams has said that's going to be in the deleted scenes when the Blu-ray's released. Mm-hmm. But they cut, just for purposes of just brevity, they cut her scene.
So
but
she ended
did
up
not,
on the base.
Yes, she did not die.
No,
she got on a ship, and when after the attack, she got on a ship and went to the base.
good.
Good to know. Good to know. So we'll be seeing more of her, and she loves that
And
Mickey.
Hopefully we'll be seeing Phasma with her helmet off.
Eventually. If they pay for Gwendolyn Christie, they're going to have to.
Yes, I mean, why cast her if she just stays in the armor the whole time?
Although, you know, my son had a good observation about Phasma, said he was that she was the Niedermeyer of the new of the First Order. Is that a planche pin? silver armor and everything.
Oh, wow.
So Chewbacca. We love him, we know him, there he is, but I think they gave him more to do as a character, didn't they?
Yes.
Best iteration of Chewbacca ever.
Although I have trouble believing that Han never once before this movie picked up his bowcaster and played with it.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, and by the way, having been playing Battlefront a little bit, the bowcaster rules. I want a freaking bowcaster.
I would also like to point out that Mark called it in the before the Force Awakens was released discussion, where he said it's going to end with Rey getting in the pilot seat.
That was me.
Oh, that was Aaron. Okay.
That was me. Thank you.
But
thank
you called
you.
It.
Yep. It's the screenwriter in me. What can I say?
I loved, I thought there was not a scene in the movie where Chewie, where you didn't know what he was thinking, know what he said. You know, obviously there's the tricks that you have to do with stuff like that. You know, having Han turn and go, "Oh, you're cold," is great. Right. But even when they cut to him for a reaction shot, at no point in time do we ever wonder what's going on in that Wookiee brain. It's on his face. It's in his eyes. His language.
Yeah. His eyes did a whole lot in this movie that I really enjoyed. The way he looked at Rey, the way he responded, just with his eyes, I thought was just
It is clear Abrams loved Chewbacca.
And Abrams
loved
is an actor's director, which is something that Star Wars has never had before.
Yeah.
Right.
I did like it when he hugged Leia. I mean, you know, that was cool.
Yeah.
Or when he's being treated by the medic and he's hitting on him.
Oh, yeah.
And the man's like, "Oh, that's very brave. That's very scary." And he's just sitting like, rawr, rawr, rawr. I'm just like, "Oh my god, I love Chewbacca in this movie."
Yeah, definitely. You can the it's clear Han wasn't the only rogue on the Millennium Falcon.
That's awesome.
Chewie the player, you know. You gotta love it.
And speaking of Captain Solo, God rest his soul, it was nice to see him in action doing what he said he did. In fact, I was pleased to know that he was smuggling again.
Yes.
And smuggling Rathars, whatever the hell those things were. Good God, that was horrifying.
Beholders from hell.
Right. Yes. They look like D&D characters, like the Ugnuktu or whatever the D&D character was with the big mouth and the tentacles. But here's Han Solo, the one that we talked about, the one that we met on Tatooine at Mos Eisley. Yeah. That was a smuggler that ran, you know, in 12 parsecs. 12 parsecs? 14 parsecs? What
it's
was
12.
It? Yeah, no, he corrected it.
Yeah.
But this is the guy 12. That he shot Guido first. And here's the nice part about The Force Awakens Han Solo. There's a scene where they're running from the Rathars, and one of the pirates or whatever gets in front of him. He punches him down, starts to run, but then stops. He goes, no, picks him up, and then tosses him into the mouth of the thing in the hallway.
Yes.
That's Han Solo.
That's Han Solo, exactly.
That is Han Solo. He's not going to just leave him there and run out. He's gonna use him to help give me some time.
And by the way, that's another – I don't want to call it a slap in the face to Lucas, but that's J.J. Abrams absolutely telling the audience, no,
Han
this
shot
is the Han that shot first, folks.
Yeah, the guy.
Yeah, for the longest time, I had to get my Han Solo fix by watching Treat Williams and Deep Rising. But
this
is the next – you know, that was the next best thing, but this is the best Solo we've had in a long time.
It was nice to see him grouchy again. I like that he's perpetually angry. I also like that he has this innate understanding of the Falcon, and he really did a good job of playing that that rough around the edges character who can be reached. You know, it's obvious that he was charmed by Rey almost from the get-go. You know, as soon as she starts talking about the hyperdrive. Is when, you know, you see the first time they finish the same sentence and he looks at her like, "Hey, hold on a second," you know?
Yeah, and you get a lot of the Mary Sue-ness people saying that, oh, well, she knows how to fix the Falcon. They completely miss the fact that she was working on the Falcon before.
All of those.
Yeah, how else would she know that it's a piece of junk? How else would she know what
was installed? And
what
you told him not
yes.
to do it, you know.
Exactly. No. Ignore the Mary Sue characters. Yeah. By the way, Han Solo has it's my favorite exchange in the entire movie when they get to the planet and Finn is like, you know, okay, well, how do we get in? Well, I don't know. How do we get in? What? The galaxy is depending on us.
Yeah.
And he's like, I know. We'll use the Force. That's not how the Force works.
My favorite line was, my favorite Han Solo exchange was, oh, yeah, well, let me tell you something, big deal. Women always, yes. Women always learn the truth.
Sure.
And there's that, I love that voice of experience, right?
Yes.
You know.
I just love that he calls him big deal.
I know,
deal.
Yeah, that was so good.
You know, again, oh, my God, I missed that Han.
Know,
oh,
yeah,
my
yeah.
Lord.
I can handle myself. I know, that's why I'm giving this to you.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not going to be nice to you. I like the finger acting as well. As
yes.
You always have to see Harrison Ford finger act. Hug now. No, hug later, escape now.
Yeah.
You know, with the finger.
Yeah.
It's nice. Yeah, there was a lot to like about this Han Solo. And when Leia arrived, we had that very nice moment between two adults who didn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't work. Was it a failure? Was there, whose fault was it? What happened with their son? Are they blaming Uncle Luke? We don't know what the story is at that point, but we knew that was the beginning of the end for Han and Leia. Although, again, roguishly, it wasn't all bad, was it?
Yeah.
You know, there was a nice little moment there.
There was definitely some Bogey and Bacall in that,
yes.
in that exchange, you know, the
yeah,
maturity
much,
levels.
Yeah.
And yes. I suspect that was probably Kasdan. His involvement. So
yeah,
I'm pretty sure almost all the Solo lines were Kasdan.
Very likely.
Well, this is that grand love story that, you know, I love you, I know. Swelling music, carbonite chamber. You know, that was that, oh my gosh, this is oh so perfect. You know, you want a rogue in your life. All that romance in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
All of that didn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a great life lesson. Sometimes it doesn't work. It's not anybody's fault.
Yeah.
It just sometimes
and
it
yet
doesn't
and
work.
Yet they still got that great exchange, you know, not all of it was bad.
Right.
There was
yes.
some good stuff.
Yeah, they still
and
care
like,
for each other.
Yeah, you know, there was some really good stuff.
Right.
And I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. They shared that love.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing we'll see in the next movie. Because we know that Harrison Ford is coming back, not being resurrected. That's bullshit. It's flashbacks.
Oh, yeah. It's a flashback.
Yeah, and people
yes,
are like, Star Wars doesn't have flashbacks. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
it does.
They had flashbacks in this
flashbacks.
Movie.
We will have flashbacks. Anyway,
I'm sorry. I don't remember the flashback in this movie.
There were a couple
the
really
touching
short
of
ones.
The lightsaber.
Yeah, once she touches the lightsaber.
Was it a flashback
it has,
or just a vision?
Well, she had visions.
It's not
but.
A flashback, though. The definition of a cinematic flashback, that was not a flashback.
Well.
Because it wasn't. Was it a flash forward? Was it a flash sideways? Because J.J. Abrams does that.
Right.
We don't
but
know
I
what
think,
that
I,
was.
I think she was seeing parts of her past.
We were
well, we don't
so.
Know.
We were definitely seeing the past where.
Well, when she was a little girl. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's a vision.
And we were also
that's
seeing.
Kind of the flashback.
We were also. The guys in the rain.
Knights
right?
of Ren.
The Knights of Ren. I suspect that was when they came to power.
Again, we don't know.
Well, we don't know.
It was an
image,
where are they? It was voices, and yeah, exactly. Where were they?
Where are the rest
so
of them?
I would...
Right. Well, I believe that Han Solo, they're going to definitely have flashbacks in the next movie because Harrison Ford's going to be in it, and he's not. They're not resurrecting.
He's a Force ghost.
No, he's not.
He looks
that
good in blue.
Wretched.
I think it's. I think it's going to be. I think what we're going to get is Luke's version of what happened. Dare I say it? From a certain point of view.
Oh.
Yes. No,
and so,
I think
so instead of telling the story like we have gotten in the Star Wars previous, I think they're going to show it. And it's a cheap
yeah.
way to get Harrison
yeah.
Ford in for an eighth film, but I don't think he's going to mind.
Yeah.
And we certainly
don't mind that. I mean, in the context of Luke telling Rey what happened, I don't mind a flashback because I think – personally, that's just more interesting than Mark Hamill. God bless him, I love him, but then Mark Hamill going, well, after Han found, you know, blah blah. No,
but
just,
what if he does it in the Joker voice?
Oh God! Well, then it's worth it.
Yeah.
When Han Solo came to me,
you ever actually seen him do the Joker voice?
Yes.
He does
yes,
the grin.
I have. Yeah, his whole face,
his whole face.
Yeah. When he did that, when he did the Batman animated series, and they would record his voice, they would film him too
yeah.
because the animators used him. as because he was very physical. He's standing up, moving, and he's moving his face and his eyes. Okay, sorry, I digress. But yes, I would be disappointed if it was a flashback. And here's why. I think that they could do other things with him. Maybe it's a holographic last will and testament. Maybe it's some kind of a message that he left on the Falcon. Maybe it's, you know, that kind of thing.
It's a flashback.
It would
use the new army of clones, and it's a psychological warfare. That's been done in another movie.
And they're all old. They're all old Han Solo clones.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know they're going to be better shots. So, right. Yeah, there's some evidence for that.
So, okay. So, Mark, you gave us a nice segue into the conclusion of our evening, Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
So, here he is, the search for Luke Skywalker. It even said at the very beginning, Luke Skywalker is missing.
It's almost a Maltese Falcon, really.
Yeah.
Luke's the MacGuffin for most of the
movie. He's the MacGuffin.
I loved the fact that we didn't get Luke in the first movie. I think that was a wise choice. I think saving something for the second film.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a commercial consideration, but there's also a storytelling consideration as well. And honestly, the through line on Jedi was always going to be Han and Leia's story. We know what happens to Luke. Luke's a Jedi. He has to go walk the galaxy like Kane in Kung Fu. I don't want to say his story is over, but his story is kind of boring. And when we find out that he tried to restart the Jedi Order and it failed, the same way that Kenobi and Vader were entangled. As soon as that happens, and it's very obvious that history is repeating itself, right? I mean, that makes perfect sense. So I like the idea that we're going to save that piece for the second movie. I think those are going to be some of the best quiet moments in the film.
And Luke knew everything that had transpired. He obviously knew everything that had happened. This is a man who reacted when Princess Leia stubbed her toe on Bespin. This guy knew exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no question. When he pulled back that hood and turned around, by the way, Mark Hamill, same age as Alec Guinness. I love that.
Yeah, that's Star Wars. Awesome.
Wonderful symmetry, yeah.
Right. Awesome. So there he is before us, is the powerful Jedi master, Luke Skywalker, and not a word was said, not a word needed to be said.
No.
I think it gave us exactly that, oh, okay, there he is. Yes, he's here.
He makes a very subtle shift in his face when mm-hmm. the lightsaber comes out.
Yes.
The initial shot as he turns around is a person who he's a little puzzled. He doesn't know who this person is. Then the lightsaber comes out and there's a sense of recognition. And not just for the lightsaber, but maybe that, like, he knows it's time to come back. Maybe, oh, you're my daughter. I don't know what it is, but there's something that plays across his face, and it's a sadness too, which is great.
Yeah. And which is why I don't quite agree that he knows everything that had happened, because I think better of Luke than if he knew that there is a weapon that's destroying millions of people and he's off on some world trying to find himself. I'm not interested at all in that Luke Skywalker.
When Rey holds up that lightsaber, and I like it, I know it's wrong. I do know it's wrong, but I'm gonna preach it because it's fun. it's my Boba Skywalker of the new generation, is that Rey is Kenobi's granddaughter, because here is Rey holding out the lightsaber just like Kenobi did when he gave it to him. And here's the granddaughter of Kenobi holding it out to him. And I would love the poetry, the operatic poetry of the grandson of Darth Vader battling the granddaughter of Ben Kenobi. It makes me smile.
Wow.
And I know it's not. You know, I just really like that.
Yeah, there's an article out there that talks about that, and you two would get along famously on that.
Well, and they also mentioned in that article, because I did read that, and I didn't think about this, but the only other character in the Star Wars universe, not the Empire, because they're the bad guys, the good guys who spoke with an accent, was Ben Kenobi.
Yes.
All right.
And everybody else who was British in the movie had to use the American accent.
Right. Exactly.
Well, one thing's for certain. regardless of what the fan theories all have to say, regardless of what we might personally think would be interesting or make a cool story, in 2 years, we all get to find out together. My prediction that this would bind the Star Wars galaxy back together again, I think I can claim that came true. You know,
yes.
we're all on the good ship Star Wars again, and everybody's got the feels, you know.
Only in 2 years?
Only 2 years.
We're all going to have to come over to your movie theater the night before it opens.
There you
and
go.
Make sure with you that the movie is in good condition and available.
Yes. I am willing to make that pilgrimage.
It's only a 6-hour drive, gentlemen.
Yeah. From where? I'm in Houston.
It's a 9-hour drive for you. But I have the best movie theater popcorn you'll ever want. We use actual melted salted sweet cream butter on our pop.
Oh, yummy.
We don't use artificially butter flavored grease like
we do not.
Mark, your conclusion there was we're not going to get any better than that. So I think that the lights are coming on here in the Lobot Lounge, and it's time to wrap this up. And we will talk about The Force Awakens again, I have a feeling. This wasn't enough.
Two-parter.
Three-parter, perhaps.
Yes, perhaps.
There's much more to say. I've enjoyed this trip down Force Awakens lane with you gentlemen, as always. So from all of us here at the Lobot Lounge, we'd like to say from Mark Finn.
Arrivederci.
Mickey Finn.
Goodbye.
Aaron DiOrive.
May the Force be with you.
And myself, Joseph Utinos. We'll see you on the other side, kids. Good night.
Cut. Print.
Perfect.
All righty. Awesome.
Boom.
The Gentleman Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design at thegentlemannerds.com by Rustix Interactive. Promotional consideration by the Death Star 4 Kickstarter program.